We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, we finally got a real upset. Not a little upset, a real upset in the NBA last night. Can't wait to talk about it.
Can't wait, man. Look, I didn't think the Heat would go away quietly, that's for sure, despite the fact they lost Jimmy Butler and they're playing a team with the best record in the league. But I didn't expect them to put on that kind of show last night. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I give them all the credit in the world, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised by anything the Heat do. And I didn't know necessarily that they, you know, couldn't win the game or be in the game. I didn't think they were going to get spanked like they did in game one, Adam. But my goodness, what a shooting display they put on last night against a team that's got a lot of versatility defensively. There's, you know, you shouldn't be giving up that many three-point looks, and the Heat knocked down every single one of them. I was so impressed with their performance and rising to the occasion and making this a series.
I put it on Twitter last night. I can't wait to talk about this game. I'm so excited about it. I told you this in the play-in. The Heat are so interesting to me in the playoffs. They just are they're a boring regular season team and a fascinating playoff team. And last night was a fascinating game. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about a much less fascinating game in the Pelicans getting blown out by the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then we'll preview tonight's games because there's a great slate tonight. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings Sportsbook. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, we referenced it in the open, 111-101. Boston Celtics held to 101 points. The Miami Heat, 111, as they make a franchise record 23 three-pointers. They shoot 53.5% to get the win. They made a big third-quarter push to build the lead, which is where I think the team started to believe. And then they closed it out. Legs, what stands out to you as the top story from this one?
All right, I know that the three-point shooting is going to get the headline. And to put it in perspective, what you watched in that regard last night, I had some research, ESPN researchers do a little work for me this morning. There's been roughly, since the three-point line went in 1979, 3,300 rough, give or take, playoff games. Three times in the history of the NBA playoffs has a team made more threes than they did last night. Three times.
Wow.
So put that in perspective. This wasn't just a great night for the Heat franchise, which was a record-setting night. This was like all-time great shooting performances in NBA playoff history. That's what you witnessed last night. So, look, give them credit. Certainly we can talk about some of the stuff that Boston maybe did to contribute to some of that. I am much more interested in what Miami did differently to Boston on the other end of the floor, because for me, that's the bigger story. Boston is not going to give up, you know, 23 made threes. They probably won't give up 16, 15 again in this series. Okay. The 23 made threes, it's an anomaly. It's a crazy shooting night by their team. All right. And they hit everyone, and it seemed like they all fed off of each other, the confidence level that each of those guys had. The other end of the floor is more concerning. 101 points for a team with this kind of firepower. You know, Celtics only take 32, 10 below their season average. They make more and take more than any team in the league. So what did Miami do differently? Well, the numbers bear it out. In the first game, far more blitz-oriented on ball screens and far more drop coverage on ball screens. That was clearly what their intention was in game one. They got smoked. Now, part of that was, you know, you're coming out of the play-in and the Celtics been sitting there waiting, resting their guys down the stretch of the season, you know, to manipulate everything. So they were just ready for them, kind of expected that. But the adjustment made in this game was much more switching than it was trapping. So they decided, you know what, we're going to roll the dice and see if some of these other guys besides Tatum and Brown can hurt us when they get switches. And Kristaps Porzingis being the guy they targeted in that.
Yep.
He was guarded a lot by Caleb Martin on some of these switches. He was guarded by Jaime Jaquez on some of these switches. He was guarded by Tyler Hero at times on some of these switches. And he did not make him pay at all. And he goes 1-for-9 for 6 points. I mean, could not possibly have played worse offensively on a night, you know, when they needed him because of the switching. He's the guy that's going to benefit maybe the most from that because he's 7'3". He gets a smaller guy on him. He can turn and shoot that mid-post jump shot anytime he wants. And he just was a non-factor. So that was the first thing that stood out to me. Miami decided, you know what? We're going to roll the dice and just switch and see what happens. How do they attack it? So that's first. As a result of that, Adam, the Boston Celtics were far heavier in isolation plays than they were in the first game. And that is when you and I have talked about this repeatedly, and really anybody that's watched the Celtics, if you know what you're talking about, knows that's when they look vulnerable. When there's too much of that ball stoppage, guys pounding it, guys trying to take guys off the dribble one-on-one, trying to do their own thing. When they're at their best, the ball changes sides of the floor. There's usually multiple dribble penetrations on the same possession where you get both feet into the paint, you force some sort of convergence, kick, and then get teams to chase that ball around the perimeter. That's when they run you out of the building because of the number of three-point shooters they have, because you're not going to catch up to the ball in that situation. Well, when you want to come down, get a switch, and then you're just going to call everybody out, go 1-4 flat, whatever it may be, and now let me take this guy off the dribble, that's when the Celtics are making themselves easier to guard. So I look at it like this. Prolific, epic shooting performance out of the Miami Heat. No question about it. That will be the headline. That was the majority of the highlights that everybody's watching from that game. What they did to Boston and Boston's inability to make them pay for it on the other end of the floor was the story of the game to me.
Yeah, there's a lot in their legs because I think you're right. There's a couple layers, but the big one was Miami's goal was clearly to keep them from getting in rotation, keep the ball from popping. And last night they had 21 assists. I looked it up because that's such a low number. They were 7-6 in the regular season when they had 21 assists or fewer, meaning they're not, what they love to do is drive and kick. ISO drive, pick and roll drive, and then kick it out once the rotations start. So Miami committed to, we're going to switch. And by the way, they did a good job with their switches. They switched some in game one, but I thought that the attention to detail, not getting beat, not, you know, forcing that to be a true switch and get late in the shot clock, that was the emphasis. And as a result, you had a lot of late, there was a lot of possessions. Last night, I kept thinking while I'm watching it, 15 seconds went off the clock and nothing's happened for the Boston Celtics. They ran an action, switch, they have to pull it back out because nothing. And then at the end, you're kind of scrambling. That was all the hope of what Miami Heat did defensively. The decisions they made, the hope was that you could force them to try to just attack mismatches, and Porzingis was not up to the task last night. And then that you'd hope they would get in late shot clock situations so the ball's not moving and it became easier to guard. They executed that part so perfectly, and it made me wonder, Legs, they're coming off of two play-in games, tired into game one. I wonder if they knew all along this is how we were going to strategize to beat them. But we don't want to throw that punch in game one knowing that that's a rested team. We're not rested. Let's play it straight up, and let game two is where we're going to use that. I kind of wondered if that was the strategy.
A lot of times I would say in response to something like what you just said, just having, you know, lived it and kind of been in locker rooms, that's maybe overthinking what really takes place, except for this case. I think you might be onto something there, and particularly because of who we're talking about, that is coaching the other team. We're effusive in our praise of Eric Spoelstra. I've said, I don't care who, you give me any 10 players, whether it's at the health club down the street or the Olympic team or any team in the NBA, that's the guy I would want to coach any 10 players you hand me. That's how much respect I have for Eric Spoelstra, how smart he is, how passionate he is. He's energized. He everything you want a coach to be, he is. So he could be the type of guy to look at it in those terms. Like one, to your point, like game one, you almost felt was a sacrificial lamb game for the Miami Heat. Like we're going to give, because we're not beating them anyway. We could play our best game. the way that they were able to play their guys down the last 10 days, 2 weeks of the season, you're at a massive disadvantage, man. It took everything you had just to get to that game. You're probably going to get smoked in that game. So why show coverages that you think are going to be more effective right off the bat when just from a sheer adrenaline standpoint, you're probably not winning the game? I think that's a very astute observation. Is it true? I don't know. Of course, they would never – it's not the kind of thing you ever get them to own up to. But yeah. It was interesting, man. Boston last night did not operate offensively like a buzzsaw that we saw all year. And I'm talking about even just in terms of the rhythm and confidence and the way they attacked. And this is amazing to me. Kristaps Porzingis, and we're not going to lay this all at his feet, but listen, man,
a big
when you get
it.
A lot of praise, when you get that much praise throughout the course of the year for the season that you had and how different he is over the other weapons they've had in the middle in the past and what an upgrade, you know, I've been leading the charge on a lot of these comments. Well, then you're going to have to take some of this, man, when you get into a game and in a close game, by the way, this is a game that's winnable either way. In 30 minutes, you're a minus 32. Minus 32 in a close game against the Miami Heat? That's insane. So he wasn't really a factor defensively because of the amount of damage done from the perimeter. I mean, this is a team that took 43 threes, the Heat, and 32 twos.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to see a discrepancy like that really ever in an NBA game. And yeah. First of all, 75 shots is nothing. 75 shots. That's what the Heat took. That's three quarters for most teams. So he was a non-factor defensively because of the way that they were playing with being completely perimeter-based and three-point-based, and he's more of a guy that's going to affect it more at the rim. And right. Then offensively, he didn't take advantage of any of these switches. And I think it worked out to perfection. Nick, obviously, anytime you start a series, you want to win one out of two games. And I think the second game was the one that the Heat were looking at where they thought they could make some adjustments. And at least let's see how the Celtics respond. Hey, look, maybe last night the Celtics, they get those switches and they don't see drop coverage and they truck them anyway. And then Eric Spoelstra kind of goes, you know what? They're just better than us. What are we going to do? And guess what, though? He'd come up with something else for the third game, I guarantee you. But he thought, you know what? This is the game. A lot of times people think it's the first game. And in this case, I think it was the second game that you're looking at and trying to get. And they got the split that they wanted. And now we're going to see. We're going to see a lot. And understand a lot about this Boston Celtics team and how they respond in game three specifically.
I want to ask one last question about this defense, though, because in Porzingis in particular, because you're right. Porzingis has been great this year, and he's actually been great at things that I've often criticized him for, including not being able to, like, you could put a smaller but stronger guy on him. And in years past, he would shoot fadeaways and face up and one dribble sidestep. And you're like, hey, man, that's not using your advantage here. But he did a better job of that, I thought, as the season went on. I thought he actually got good at exploiting some of those mismatches. But we all know that the rules changed in stealth mode through halfway through the season. More contact was allowed. And then when you go to the playoffs, more contact yet is allowed. And right. I think these playoffs have been very physical. And I thought last night there were two things. Miami did a phenomenal job, top to bottom. All of their guys, including Jaime Jaquez, did a great job in one-on-one containment. Just hey, you're going to be on an island. You need to guard your guy. You need to get into him. You need to move your feet. Don't let us get into rotation. Guys did a good job of that. But I also thought they got physical with Porzingis, and it's a little concerning to me. Like, this is the first test of the playoffs for Porzingis with this specific thing, and he failed. He didn't just, you know, figure some things out. It was an F grade he gets in terms of handling that physicality. So as you go to game three, that's going to be on his mind. I expect him to respond. But to me, it's concerning that it's that test that he failed, the physicality test, because that's the concern with him.
Well, I think the other thing that didn't certainly lend itself to him having a good night is when you switch a lot of those ball screens that he sets, you're eliminating the pick and pop. That's a huge part of what he brings to the table. You know, the guys that have played that spot in the past, whether it's Robert Williams or Al Horford during the Tatum era, I mean, Horford is a good three-point shooter, but he's not like pick and pop, like really high level. He's more like he's spotted up, towing it up in the corner, and he can really hurt you. And he can make a pick and pop. Porzingis, that's a huge part of his game. He gets out of that screen and rotates his body really quickly to get his feet turned. And he does it, by the way, out to 27, 28, feet and beyond, which makes it impossible to rotate to him. It's a huge part of what he brings to the table and why he's so unique as a 7-3 guy that gives you rim protection and then that type of offense. When you switch, you're taking that away. So that puts more of the onus on Tatum, Brown, White, Holiday, Pritchard, whoever it is that's getting that ball screen. You got to win that matchup. You got to win that switch, and you've got to get by that guy to force a reaction with defensive help. And now when the ball comes out, you're forcing a team to be in closeout rotation and chasing, and that is when you're more likely to make a mistake or get somewhere late, and Porzingis can get a look that way. If you're going to take the pick and pop away, somebody's got to get into the paint and draw to get the ball hopping on the perimeter, and Porzingis can step into one that way. Because if he's not going to get either of those things, you're relegated to, oh, there's a switch? Okay, here you go. Back him down as far as you can. He's not going to get into the low post and drop step somebody. That's not what he's going to do. He's going to get you to about 12 feet, and then he's going to turn around. He's going to shoot over you, and he's been doing a lot better job of it this year. But he didn't get to any of that in this game. Look, I'm going to give him credit, man. I kind of was made some jokes about him earlier in his career because he was never available to play, it seemed like. And I made a joke one time, went viral, because they call him the unicorn. That was his nickname because you never see anything quite like it. And I made a joke that the other reason you could say he's a unicorn is because you never see him. Like, you know, that was like my joke, and it kind of went viral. And I was having some fun with it. And I gave him a lot of credit, man, the way he played in Washington and the way he played this year. And okay, so here we are. We're two games in. This isn't a pattern. This is one game.
One game, okay? Yeah.
Let's see. What's the answer for you individually, your pride, and then what does Mazzulla come up with? What does that team come up with? Because you can't accept that he's just not going to be a part of this series offensively. They have to make an adjustment to make sure this guy's included because he's a huge weapon for you, and I'm really curious to see what that looks like in game three.
So much. So let's move to the other side, though, now and go to the Miami Heat, who, all right, they made 23 legs. That probably won't happen again. But they were able to take 43, which is, again, uncharacteristic. They were able to take so many, and it was part of their game plan. How did they generate that many open looks? Was it something Boston did, or was it something strategic they were doing?
I think a big part of it was if you go and look at the number of times I felt like Boston overreacted to any sort of dribble penetration. At all, yeah. Whether it was a ball screen or a guy on a swing through and then drove baseline. They're a good defensive team, and they pride themselves in not having to trap anything. They can switch a lot, great versatility defensively in their starting lineup. But sometimes they have a tendency, and I actually did a touchscreen on this earlier this year. I don't remember the game or the team. They will tend to overreact to penetration rather than, you know, forcing somebody on the Heat to make a mid-range pull-up or get to the rim. Go ahead. You're not going to win in the NBA, particularly this team without Jimmy Butler, without three-point shooting. So how many of these mid-level two-point shots are you willing to take and make? How many times can you get to the rim? Because Porzingis can still be a factor there if you're driving it at him. I felt Boston overreacted to a lot of it. And so that first kick or second, there's just too much space for some of these guys. And I think, look, they're playing their percentages. They're looking at this team. It's not a super high volume three-point shooting team. They don't have a lot of what I would call pure shooters outside of Duncan Robinson. You know, Hero is not really a pure shooter. He's definitely a scorer. He can get going. Duncan Robinson's a pure shooter. Okay, target him. The rest of these guys, they probably figured like, all right, we'll take our chances with Caleb Martin. Go ahead. 5 for 6, he goes, right? In this game, 3 for 4. 5 different guys made 3 or more. You rarely ever see that. If a team makes 20, that means that one guy usually makes 7 or 8, another guy made like 6, and then like 3 other guys made 1 or 2. Yeah. They had 5 guys make 3 or more. So it was really spread out at a high level for a playoff game. And I thought Boston will look, they're going to look at the film, and they're going to see, how did they get this many shots? How were enough of them clean that they shot this percentage? And that's where their big adjustment's going to come.
What you're talking about with regards to allowing guys to shoot and, you know, Caleb Martin, we're going to protect the paint. This is the thing I was thinking about as I was preparing for the show. You can't game the system in the NBA. And I think with the way the game has evolved, the introduction of analytics and different things, again, super useful tool. I'm not like an anti-analytics guy. But you can't game the system. There's no, the numbers are telling us we don't have to guard them on the perimeter. We just have to protect the paint. You can't do that. You still have to play basketball. And I think that was part of what I felt watching the Celtics was they thought this team can't beat us with three-point shooting, so we'll just let them have it. You can't let a team have it because these are NBA players, and they have belief. And that's that's part of it, and that's part of what happened. Tyler Hero, 14 assists last night.
Yeah, man.
The 24 points are impressive. 6 of 11 from 3 is impressive, but 14 assists is not something I saw coming.
No, listen, I saw somebody comment when I said Tyler Hero is not a pure shooter. He's not. He's never been over 40% once in his career from the three-point line. You're not getting into pure shooter category unless you're at least in the 40s from the three-point line. That's what I mean.
He's a bucket getter, not a pure shooter.
That's it. He's like a really, really good player, and he's a really good scorer. And last night, he was sensational. He was the best player on the court, without question. And here's what I was so impressed by. Tyler Hero's not a pure point guard. Tyler Hero's a combo guard, right? He's not. He's a ball-handling two-guard. Like, he can make plays, and it's part of his thing, like, to create space for himself and all that, and he can get going. Last night, it was like his show against this level defense, and he did what he wanted to do. You know what's interesting, Adam? He didn't just have 14 assists. 10 of them were for threes. So he had 6 threes himself. He contributed by helping facilitate another 30 that he helped create. 48 points alone from the three-point line that Tyler Hero contributed to last night. He made every right read. He was strong with the ball. He played with he was so energized when he had the basketball in the way he was probing. And they were trying to get into him and get physical with him. He's not like he's a pretty slightly built guy. So if you're going to allow a little bit more hand checking, you got guys like Holiday and White and Tatum and Brown, you're going to try to get into him. They tried. He was elusive, man. He would step back. He'd release the defender, separate a little bit, and change hands and go to create some space. I thought he was so crafty and so clever and gave them such a sense of security with the basketball that really, I think, was the biggest reason that they played as well as they did offensively. I can't say enough about how well he played last night and looked like a traditional lead guard. Not just a lead guard. That's an all-star caliber starting point guard performance that he put on last night. So nothing but praise for Tyler Hero.
And by the way, 14 assists is the most of any player in the playoffs so far. Second most is Tyrese Halliburton with 12. So kind of a wild thing. It was not on my bingo card. All right, legs, it's time to talk about the Olympian, Bam Adebayo. 21 points, 10 rebounds, 9 of 13 shooting.
Oh.
Listen, legs, you gave him some flack a couple weeks ago, rightfully so. Hey, he didn't have a very good first play.
No, I'm going to let you go right now because I know where this is going, and all you're going to do is support what I said.
No! I love it.
That's all you're going to do. That's all you're going to do.
Because he has this in him. He could do this every night. Why not?
Yeah, because, oh my God forbid, I asked him to do a little more.
He heard you. He was watching the show the other day. He said, you know what? Legs is right. I am an Olympian. I need to go out there. But this guy in the clutch. So Porzingis, it was twofold. One, he just came up small on all those switches. But two, Bam Adebayo was not afraid of him in the clutch. He was going at him in the post. He closed this game. Like, there was the first 4 minutes of this game. We're talking about a lot of threes, you know, all the stuff we talked about. But the close of this game, how are you going to get buckets? It was Bam posting up Kristaps Porzingis, getting to his spot and hitting that fall. His moves, I was watching with a friend. His moves are kind of the same. He jabs, gets to the middle with his back, shimmies, and then fall away. Almost every time is he going left, going right, but it's always that fall away. He hit it like 6 times in a row to close out this game, all of them over Porzingis. Put some respect on his name, legs.
Listen, man. The whole reason – listen, I had a coach tell me this one time, and it's so true, and it's the advice I gave to my kids. And I've had this conversation with players over the years that I've coached, okay? Because, you get on them, and they get upset about it, and they think that you're picking on them or you don't like them or, like, whatever it may be, right? Truth of the matter is, I've told players this, you only worry – when you're being ignored,
that's when you got to worry
as a player. And I'm talking about now for me as an analyst to Bam Adebayo, man. If I'm not talking about Bam and what he did in the game that I called him out when he had 10 points, took 7 shots in a game that they needed his offense on a night when Jimmy Butler got hurt, I did it because I know there's more there. That's why it's a compliment. Guess what? He did it. He rose to the occasion. I'm glad I had that effect. I'll be expecting a call from Eric Spoelstra later thanking me for what I did to fire him up and get him ready to go because this is what I'm talking about. You know what? I'm going to tell you something right now. One of the things I look at his stat line, and you know what I like to see? Because he gets credit so much for being this super versatile, all-around, you know, center that can handle the ball and make plays. That's all great, man. He had two assists, and I'm glad he had two assists because that meant he was focused more on doing what he had to do, which was provide offense, production. Let Tyler Hero take care of that tonight. I'm going at guys, and I'm going to get us buckets that are going to help secure this win. You're right. He played great. He's capable of doing more or having more nights like this offensively than he gives us. Nobody's ever going to question his defense, and he plays hard every night. Respect him. I think some nights he's just not as aggressive as he needs to be. He certainly was in this one, and they needed it.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, some of this is give and take. I thought the Celtics packing the paint, you run the pick and roll up top with him, and everybody goes with him. They roll. Don't let Bam roll. Don't let him get anything in the paint, wall off the paint. And so you swing the ball around the perimeter and you get open threes. At the end of the game, the Celtics are shook. They just got to get stops. Now it's, we can't give him open shots. We got to get stops. And now Bam's able to operate because now you're playing a little bit more honestly and he's able to operate. So it's very interesting to see what decisions the Celtics make right out of the gate in game three. Are they going to change up their strategy or are they going to say nobody makes 23 threes two games in a row and dares Miami to beat them with the same game plan? I'm curious to see what decisions both coaches make. But real quick, let's just give the hypothetical. Sometimes you lose. In the playoffs, 1-1, even great teams can lose a home game. You go on to win the season. Like Denver last year lost to Miami in game two. They won the next three. But what happens if the Heat win game three? What happens in that case to the Boston Celtics?
I am so glad you asked this question. I didn't know if we were going to get here. I was going to have one more comment, and this was going to be it, to your point. The Boston Celtics at 64-18, I'm telling you right now, this run that they're about to go on in this ride is going to be the most scrutinized 64-win team in NBA history. It is. That's what's going to happen. And by the way, I think it's justified because there's something clearly that we see some nights that make you realize that this team is vulnerable. Vulnerable. Yeah. And here's what I said on the air all morning long. It's almost as if I issued a challenge to the Boston Celtics. Listen, you're right. This happens in the NBA, and this is an incredibly well-coached team that they just played a lot of pride. They've got competitors, and they shot the hell out of the ball. And here we are. You want to squash this right now? You don't just go down and get a split in Miami. You win game three, and you do it decisively. And you go down there, and you immediately flip that script right back where it was at the start and let people know, hey, what you watched all year to see those 64 wins, it's legit, man. So anybody doubting us, this is what happens when we get serious and we make some adjustments. Because I'm telling you right now, Adam, if they lose game three, this is going seven. If they lose game three, this is a seven-game series, man. As a 64-win one seed, you will be pushed to the brink in a game seven at home. And by the way, that's not going to be last year's Philadelphia 76ers team with James Harden on it that you're going to get in that game that folded like a cheap tent. You're going to get the Miami Heat and Eric Spoelstra if it gets to a game seven in Boston. That's going to be a different proposition. So if you don't win game three, sign up for seven. I'm telling you right now. And I think the best message they can send to everybody, not just win, go down there, win decisively. Get home court right back. Get it right back. Right? Isn't that the best way to answer what we all watched last night? Shut off their water from the three-point line and move the ball better and hit them with a 20-made three-point game the way you did to all these teams this season. That's the challenge to the Celtics. I'm as curious as anybody if they can pull that off. But if they don't, this thing is going to get real interesting and it's going to get real tight for some of those guys on that team.
All right, well, let's head to break. On the other side, I want to talk about the other series. Wasn't quite as compelling in large part because one team just absolutely dominated. And then later on, there's a great slate of games tonight. We'll get into all of those with a quick preview of every single one of them on the other side of the All-NBA show. First, it's almost time for the weekend. It's time to start making plans. What are you getting into this weekend? Well, hop on the Game Time app and see what's going on in your neck of the woods. Maybe you want to buy tickets to the playoff game in your area. You get the flash deals, zone deals, last-minute ticket deals. You can set alerts if there's a ticket you have your eye on. I was hearing, what city was it? I was hearing courtside ticked were like, maybe it was the Clippers game. They were like $500 or something for a playoff game. That's wild to me. Hop on Game Time app. You can peruse all that stuff. Maybe you can't go to a game, but you want to go to a festival or concert. It's that time of year. It's starting to get sunny here in Colorado. We're getting the outdoor concert season is about a month away. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code ALLMBA for $20 off your first purchase. Again, redeem that code ALLMBA to get $20 off your first purchase. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. Also want to tell you about a new product, DraftKings Pick 6. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and use code ALLMBA. Do you ever play that over-under game with your friends? You know, maybe you're saying, how long will it take me to get from here to there? I bet I can make it home in 30 minutes. You're going to take the over or the under, or you're just trying to bet on something. That's basically the idea of the Pick 6. It's a new fantasy game from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. And here's how to play during the NBA playoffs. Pick between 2 and 6 players and choose if they'll have more or less of a certain stat. It can be rebounds, points, or assists, or even a lot more steals, everything else. It's really easy. You just say, are they going over or under? And you track your picks and play against others for a shot to win huge cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now. It's a separate app. So DraftKings Pick 6 app and use code ALLMBA for a huge shot at cash prizes. That's code ALLMBA only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 and over in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date list of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back here on the All-NBA Show, if you're watching live, throw us a like. If you're watching later, throw us a comment. Let us know what you're thinking of the show, if you have questions for Legs. We see all the questions. There were no questions in the comments yesterday. Lots of comments, but no questions. Send us those, and if we find one compelling, we'll talk about it on this very show. The Pelicans were competitive with the Thunder for about 7-8 minutes in this one, and a lot of that had to be with Jonas Valanciunas, who was getting a lot of work in the paint early on and just bullying his way to the rim. But about halfway through the first quarter, that completely dried up, and the Thunder went on their run and never looked back. They outscored them 35-22 in the first quarter, and then opened up another bigger lead in the third quarter and then closed this thing out in the fourth. It was pretty dominant and overwhelming. Were you more impressed with the Thunder or unimpressed with the Pelicans' Legs?
Well, man, I would have to go with the Thunder on this. They were incredibly sharp and crisp, and you and I had texted – in between game one and game two, because, you know, that New Orleans had a shot to win that game. And we both were kind of going back and forth with our thoughts. What do we expect in game two? And we both came to a consensus. We expected what we saw last night. I said, I think you're going to see the real Thunder. I think they're going to put one on them, because they didn't come close to peak efficiency in that first game. And what we watched all year, which is a team that's got great role definition, incredible continuity. I actually think they've got the second best flow amongst starters in the league behind Denver. I think their flow offensively is even better than Boston's.
I agree.
The way that they play, because there's some limitations on some of these guys, right? This isn't as talented as Boston's starting five, but the way that they play and doing things that they're capable of and avoiding their weaknesses, it's just so impressive. So I kind of had a feeling it was going to go like this. And then, you know, you wonder if is Shea going to, going to do his thing? And he was spectacular. Their starters were 40-for-66 from the field. Okay. That's 61%. I mean, it's outrageous. They shot over 50% from the three. They were 16-for-18 from the line. They didn't really need much off their bench. Isaiah Joe was pretty good in his minutes.
Yep.
They didn't really need much else, man. Their starters did it all. They were impressive. Their pace was great. Their ball movement was great. Their player movement was great. Their contested shot making was off the charts. They were a team last night, Adam, that looked like how a one seed should treat an 8 seed. That's what it looked like, right? And early here in the playoffs, especially an 8 seed that's shorthanded and missing Zion Williamson, you put the hammer to them because you get to your pace and rhythm and realize there's a reason we had the best record in the Western Conference. And that's exactly what they looked like last night. That was one of the more impressive and all-around offensive performances that I've seen in the playoffs so far.
Because nothing of it felt gimmicky. And not that the Miami Heat game was a gimmick, but they made 23 three-pointers. So you say, okay, that contributes to it. look, the Pelicans shot well, 48% from three, 14 of 29. But 29, it wasn't like they were relying on it. They just did their drill drive game. And more to the point, they did the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander game, 13 of 19. He got to his spots. They have some of the best defenders in the NBA are on the Pelicans to guard Shai, you would think, with Herb Jones and Trey Murphy. They've got length. They've got guys. He was, for the most part, completely unbothered last night. And to me, that's the thing that stands out. They won, and I've all year legs have talked about the Thunder in the playoffs. And look, I think the Pelicans are the worst team in the playoffs in the West, so let's take it all with a grain of salt. But we talked about the size mismatches are going to be more noticeable and possibly exploitable in the playoffs. Well, that happened to them last night. Valanciunas bullied them, and it didn't matter, because Chet Holmgren still had a great game, and they still managed to dominate this game. So that's my big takeaway from this one is – they so far through two games haven't really been affected by the playoffs are different thing. It's been the same, and they won the exact way they've won all their games this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it was interesting early. It was similar to what the Clippers did to Dallas in game one with Zubats, right? It was just like a steady feeding of their center for the first 5-6 minutes of the game. And Valanciunas, I believe, had like their first 11 points. Like everything they did offensively went to him, and he was throwing Chet Holmgren around. And even when they threw extra help down there, it didn't matter. Valanciunas, but they're all 2-point shots. They're like, okay, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work over the first 4 or 5 minutes of the game to get to 10 points, right? And they weren't too concerned about it. And Chet Holmgren, to his credit, you know, he didn't get in any serious foul trouble. And then on the other end, his versatility offensively and stepping away from the basket, making some threes, but then driving by Valanciunas when he closed out on him. You know, Holmgren's really good at getting into the dribble handoff game, and he's a threat then to spin out for the lob. He was so active offensively on the other end to make Valanciunas work and to overcome what was happening to him defensively. I thought it was a great answer on his part. He played like a star offensive player in this game, man. He was so confident with every aspect of his game offensively. And he is a lot of nights, but a lot of nights, you know, he's just a solid offensive player. When he plays like he did last night, and you have to deal with Jalen Williams, you have to deal with Shai, and then Holmgren is that aggressive and that good, and he's making perimeter shots too. That's when you look at Oklahoma City and you go, okay, let's not dismiss them when we start talking about like how this is going to play out here, like in the next round. Because I know we've talked a lot about, you know, obviously Denver, but then it's like always, who's that next team that's going to be there? Some people say Dallas, like me. Some people are saying Minnesota. Nobody's really saying Oklahoma City. And when they play like they did last night, even though it's the Pelicans, they gave you a reminder last night of how good that looks when they get flowing like that.
Yeah. And then I got to talk about Brandon Ingram. Can he have two good games in a row? Can he do it? Because this is one where I was so frustrated watching him.
Yeah.
I've said this on the show. I don't have anything against him personally. This is not like a biased thing. He is one of the most frustrating players I've ever watched. And last night was an example of it. 10 shots, 5 of 10, minus 30, a game worse. 18 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. But just a spiritless game from him. And in all the key moments when you're like, all right, now it's the time to respond, he seemed either uninterested or just like frustrated and incapable of it. I just thought it was such an unimpressive and uninspiring game from him in a way that makes me the most frustrated.
Yeah, I agree, man. He's a frustrating guy in that regard because he's so talented and just a long wing that can handle the ball and shoot over people is such a weapon. And you remember going back to the play-in situation when I raised the fact that like no one was really talking about how he acted in that game when he didn't play in the fourth quarter and he kind of pouted. He sat on the bench. He wasn't really engaged with his teammates. He didn't seem like he's being fully supportive of the comeback they made with their second unit. He just wasn't part of what was going on. I thought it was a weird look. I thought it was a bad look for him. And I'm not saying that there definitively is something there more with just his energy level and his overall like happiness. And is it a Willie Green thing? Is like, what is it? I don't know. But you see him in a night like last night. Okay, you guys lost by one possession. Had a shot to win the game at the end of game one. You really have one shot to make this interesting. Win game two. And you were in game one, so you have to believe that that's possible. And you need him. No Zion. CJ McCollum's offense has been very inconsistent. You're the one guy, man. You're the difference maker. You're the guy that can go get 30. Even against tough defense, you can do that because you're that talented. And he takes 10 shots, man. His 18 points is not really a factor. And then he's the kind of guy that when it starts to get away from them, he's you know, that gets to 12, 14, 16, he's not going to think like he can go on a mini run and get them back in it. It's kind of like, oh, well, resigned to the fact that it, you know, it's not our night or we're going to lose. And so I agree with you, man. He's too talented to have nights where you don't really notice his effect offensively. So I agree with that.
Yeah. Any other thoughts from this series? I mean, to me, the Thunder are a lot better. I think they probably are better coached. And this is just feels like a 4 or 5 game series to me, in part because I don't know that the Thunder are going to make or execute the type of adjustments that could make this series interesting, and they're not as talented.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't see any reason why, if Oklahoma City is absolutely in the right mindset, that this is more than anything, more than a sweep. I don't think New Orleans can play with them. I think Oklahoma City can play poorly and still win. New Orleans has to play great, I think, to win a game in this series. I think Oklahoma City goes down their game 3, take care of business, and I think you're going to see a team sort of – when you're down 3-0 and you're going to that fourth game and you've already got guys missing, and we talked about Ingram, and is his mentality going to be to fight? That's when you get to that third game. I mean, the third game's over and you're down 3-0. The fourth game's just a matter of business at that point, and Oklahoma City moves on. They're far better. Collectively, the way they play, the energy they're playing with, and then they've got this star player that there's just not an answer for. You're not going to hold him down. I think Oklahoma City should sweep this series.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's go to the ones tonight because there's a great slate tonight. We haven't talked Cavs Magic very much, so I'll start there. The Magic are not scoring a lot of points in this series, and that's really been the problem. When they move home, is it become easier, or is this just a function of their roster tonight? What do you think about the Magic's chances, given that they're not really scoring even 90 points, let alone 100?
All right, first I'm going to give full disclosure. I haven't seen a whole lot of this series. I'll be the first one to own up to that. Okay, there's a lot of games going on, Adam.
I'll tell you what, you missed a lot of misses.
I got a lot of games to watch, Adam. When I go on the air the next day and start talking, right? So it's just hard to get to them all.
Yeah.
I picked the Cavaliers to win the series, but I thought it would be a long series. I do think Orlando, based on what I've watched out of them this year, I think Orlando has a big response in them going home. I do believe that. I think Orlando's going to win the game tonight. Otherwise, if they lose tonight and they get swept or something by a team that they were one game different than in the regular season, what does that say about the season they just had? I mean, is this going to be like another Kings situation like last year where the Kings were a 3 seed in the West, and then they get bounced in the first round, you know, by a 6 seed, albeit not a normal 6 seed with, you know, Steph Curry on it. That's not a normal situation. I get it. But it still took 50 out of them to win that game. And then that was that. It's a wrap on the Kings season. And now this year, not much to be heard from the Kings. So is that what we looked at this year? This is a young team on the rise. Like, I think that they're going to have a great response. I watched them enough this year to really admire them and like them. And was giving them all the credit in the world for staying in that mix in the top four all year in the East. I think they go home, and I think they play really well. And Banchero, I think, has a monster game. And this gets to 2-1. Beyond that, I'm not sure. Let's see how it plays out. I think the Cavs are a better team. I think they've just got more experienced guys, too, in this situation. So I think the Cavaliers will win the series. But whether it's a long series is all going to be dependent on tonight. And I think Orlando has a good response to this.
I think it all comes down to Jalen Suggs. He is 6 of 21 from the field so far in this playoffs. You don't count on him to shoot well every night anyway. He's not one of those guys. But unfortunately, to win in the playoffs, they're going to have to get scoring, and he's the guy I kind of look at and say they need it from him. Knicks 76ers on TNT. This might be the marquee game tonight. Heartbreaker. 76ers in the last one. Really, not even a heartbreaker. They fumbled it at the finish line. So do they bounce back tonight, Legs?
Man, oh man, listen, there's so many factors in this series. I think the Sixers are going to win the game. And it's interesting. I don't think enough has been made about the fact that, and I'm not big, Adam, by the way, I want to preface what I'm about to say by saying this. I'm not big on one of those guys that overreact to people predicting they're going to win, like an athlete saying, oh, we're going to guarantee we're going to win the next game. And people lose their minds. Oh my God, he predicted a win. I don't understand what you think athletes think like. Like, they think they're going to win every game. That's the way athletes think, right? And you're supposed to think that, so to articulate it, I don't get it. I understand the Joe Namath thing and guaranteeing that Super Bowl win, and that's kind of what we always make reference to. But Joel Embiid, the other night after the game, did say, he didn't say, we're going to win game three. He said, we're going to win the series. Like, and I thought, wow, that's a big statement, man. You're down 0-2. Yeah. You are about 60% of your normal physical peak level, and you still feel that confident in this. Now, the reason I bring that up, when you do say something like that, it's incumbent more upon you than anybody else on your team to absolutely go out there and make that happen. Now, is he capable? We're going to find out because he had an extra day off. So I think at the beginning of the game, he's probably going to feel really good because that's been his MO here with this. And he's probably going to be unbelievable in the first half of this game. Can he maintain it? Does he, you see him start to limp a little bit more as the game goes on? And that's when the Knicks start to, you know, find some life and see what happens in the second half. I think Embiid's going to be great tonight, even on one leg. He's already put up great numbers. I give him all the credit in the world for playing through this, whatever he's feeling like, because he is just so stiff in the second halves of these games. And I said it, you know, listen, I don't think they can win the series. If he's not a paint player, he's basically relegated to a perimeter player now, particularly in the second half. And by the way, I think some of that is because he doesn't have lift in the post or hold his position because of his leg. I think the other part, Adam, is the more time he spends in the paint or on the offensive glass or whatever, offensively, he can't get back and defend. He can't change ends of the floor. He's giving himself a 30-foot head start is what he's doing to get to the other end. I really believe that's part of why he spends the entire second half on the perimeter. So I don't think he can win the series, but I think he knows he has to back up what he said. And he's got to be even better. He's been really good in the first two games, 31 a game. He's got to be even better. He might need 40 tonight. As improbable as it may sound on one wheel, he might need to do that. And I think the adrenaline that they're going to get tonight playing at home against a team that has a lot of X factors offensively that you don't know what that's going to look like, there's margin for error there for the Sixers, man. I think they have a great response tonight. And the last thing I'm going to say is this. None of what I said holds any water if you don't get something out of Kelly Oubre, Buddy Hield, Nicholas Batum. Like, those guys got to show up. You got to offer some help offensively. So that's a big part of it. Those guys all give you single digits again, and they combine for 12 points or something. Then the Sixers are going to lose again. They need some help from those guys. I expect Maxey to be really good again. And then I think Embiid is going to be great, even on one leg, because he's going to go out there and try to back up what he said.
What about Jalen Brunson? Because he obviously can shoot better than he has so far in the series. But do you see him? I mean, you just played two games at home and didn't shoot well. Is this a matter of the Knicks aren't that complicated? They don't have that many initiators, so he's always going to be easy to target when you have a good defensive team? Or do you see tonight as a night where, hey, you think he can go off and carry them to a road win?
I think this. I know this. If he has a similar shooting night to the first two, they're not winning three games in a row when Jalen Brunson shoots like that.
It would be a bad sign if you're Philly if that happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to happen. You're not winning three games. If he's down in like the mid-30s percentage-wise shooting the ball when you're taking that many shots, 25 to 30 shot attempts, and you're that inefficient, if he does that for a third straight game, Sixers are winning the game. So that's just put that out there right now. They won't win another game. They might win another game of the series down the road. They're not winning three games in a row when Jalen Brunson playing like this or shooting like this offensively. Part of it is you got to give credit to the Sixers' length on the defenders they have on him. Those guys have bothered him. Oubre has bothered him. I think Batum has bothered him. Those are long guys. Their pursuit has been fantastic over these ball screens coming from behind him as he's going up to shoot. Their hands coming over the top of his head. You can see he's got a little herky jerkiness, hesitation in there because the pursuit has been fantastic against him. So give them credit. And if they can do it again for a third straight time, the Sixers are going to win the game.
Let's go to the other great one, which is, of course, the Nuggets going to L.A. They're up 2-0. Snatched victory from the claws of defeat. in the last game. Do the Lakers bounce back tonight, and what are you looking for in that one?
Yeah, look, I have more faith the Sixers win than the Lakers. I look at what happened with the Lakers the other night, and I say, man, you get that kind of performance out of your three best offensive players, and you have a 20-point lead, and you still don't close the deal? That to me, even though you know they have LeBron, you think they've been through everything, you can put it behind you. That's a gut punch in the moment tonight. If they get another lead and it starts to get erased, or Denver hits them with a punch early and they get up, the doubt, that's 10 straight games, 10 straight wins, yep, including the last one, which was the most improbable of all of them, that the Nuggets won that game. It starts to sink into your psyche. So I look, could the Lakers win? Sure, absolutely. They've got LeBron and AD, and they're both playing great. Absolutely. The Lakers could win this game tonight. I have more faith that the Sixers will, because of the Sixers' opponent and there being a little bit more fluctuation in the Knicks' performance than the Nuggets. And if the Nuggets, yeah, I think, sense it tonight, and this is a one-possession game, 5 minutes to go, I think the Nuggets are going to really smell the end of this series. And you're going to see that peak execution once again. So they could win. I don't have a ton of faith that the Lakers will win.
For both the Sixers and the Lakers, you know, you can't make up a two-game deficit in one game. But you win game three and game four becomes very interesting. The pressure almost evens out. I wouldn't say it shifts. I think you have to even the series for the pressure to shift to the other side. But it evens out at least. You can go into game four, and if you're up, you know, all of a sudden 2-0 becomes 2-1. Both teams at least feel some level of pressure. Whereas right now, the Knicks, the Nuggets, they get to enter tonight with no pressure. And that's obviously their advantage. I'm curious for both of those games. Even Cavs, yeah, Magic. You know what? Jalen Suggs, make some shots for me. Let me see what happens tonight if you get a little bit hot from three.
Well, and I'm just going to tell everybody right now, just so everybody's very, very clear on this, in case there's no misunderstanding. I will be watching the first two picks of the NFL draft, okay? Because my Washington Commanders, yeah, are picking two, and okay, it still seems like it's up in the air, although it sounds like Jaden Daniels is going to be the guy to quarterback from LSU. We're picking a quarterback. They haven't disclosed which one, so I will be tuned into that. I don't know, what time is the draft? 8 o'clock, I believe, probably, I'm guessing. So,
yes, 8 o'clock. You know,
second pick will be over by 8:15. Okay. So just so you know, I'll be a little distracted in the beginning of those two early games.
But I won't ask pick, any
after
questions.
That pick, I'll be good to go.
No questions about the first quarter of Cavs or Knicks. No questions about that tomorrow from me. All right. We got a couple super chats, Emma. The people are super chatting us, legs.
Let's go. Jay Money. Let's go.
The Jay Money says, Tim, at the start of the season, you thought I might be lying about being a Washington fan, but today's the day for us. Who do you want DC to take tonight? You kind of just answered it. Well, you said who you think they'll take.
No, I want Drake May. I want Drake May. I've been saying it for weeks. I want Drake May. Some of the NFL guys I trust want Drake May. A lot of people are high on Jaden Daniels, too, so it's going to be interesting. I'm worried that this isn't the place he wants to go. You don't make a pick this important unless a dude is 100% bought in and completely excited about that opportunity. And if that's not the case, you can't do it. You just can't. You're setting yourself up for disaster. The pick's too important. I want Drake May, but it doesn't sound like that's where they're going to go. Why would they listen to me? You know, who am I? Just a season ticket holder. Just a season ticket holder in our family for 50 years. What do we know?
I can't wait for tomorrow, legs, to be fired up that they took the wrong guy. I cannot wait for it. We might just do the whole show on the draft tomorrow. Who knows? What else we got here? Psycho Blue. He says, Spo is the, you know, you can't throw these at me.
Zhu Lang.
Who is this, legs?
It's Zhu Lang. He's a coach.
Okay. If you got hopes for a conquest on ships, he'll find a way to set you ship on fire and stop your conquest dead in its tracks. Give him coach of the year already. There you go.
Listen, man, there was a lot in that super chat, man. You might want to refund that. That was a lot going on in that question. I don't know if I should be taking any money, because I was with you on the Liu Zhang part, and then it just got all wild in the middle.
Yeah. And then Luke Studebaker says the moving screens from Bam open up half those threes. Look, it's the playoffs, guys. Fight through it, man.
Is that a Celtics fan talking about
yeah,
moving screens?
Hold on a second. The Celtics. Yeah.
Are you talking
man.
About moving screens? Come on, man. Come on, man. Come on.
We got one more. Frank says, legs missed the JV game, Cavs versus Magic. Say it ain't so. LOL. That series, honestly, has been a snooze fest. It's true. You missed it, but you didn't miss much. Any other ones, Emma?
Nope, we're all done.
All right, let's get out of here. Everybody, what a great show today. Great shows all week, and tonight's slate is my favorite one. Some big ones, which means Friday's show is going to be great. We are live at noon Eastern time tomorrow, a little bit early for you. So we'll be doing that one. Take your lunch break with us. Legs, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, listen, man. I can't wait to get on tomorrow and talk about these games. And as big as it is tonight, the biggest game of the postseason to this point takes place tomorrow night. Mavs-Clippers game 3, man. I think that's the biggest game to be played in this year's postseason to this point. Tonight's going to be great. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I hope we get two great finishes tonight at least, or maybe three. But we're going to break it all down tomorrow. I can't wait to see you.
Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us. Hit that like button on the way out. See you next time.